Tonight's Yom Kippur. It is a night of contemplation, consideration, a night to think about our past and to wonder about the future. This can be a night of many emotions, mixed feelings, even conflicting thoughts. Tomorrow and so many more tomorrow stretch before us, and we are uncertain what the year or even tomorrow may bring. We hope that the future will meet our dreams and expectations, yet we are not naive. We know that our dreams and our hopes may not be realized. And that at any moment, at any time, without warning or concern, a crisis may hit us or our family or our community. While we can influence the course of many events, much is beyond our control. This is a night for us to pause, to reflect on what has been, and to consider what might be. And while this reflection is a solitary endeavor, we know that we are connected with others who choose to do the same. Being with others strengthens us as we look forward and back. For the last several summers, I've had the good fortune to spend many of those months traveling because of my wife's job. It's meant that we've had the opportunity to spend weeks, even months, exploring and learning, challenging me to see the world from a new and different perspective. And those summer sojourns have helped to inform my thinking. In some years, my experiences helped to shape the talks that I give on these high holidays. Well, this summer, too, I was out of town for over a month. And what I experienced has informed my thinking. But this journey was very different than the journeys I've taken in the past. It wasn't too long ago. I was sitting in another large space just like this. Large, but it was relatively empty of people. There were others with me, a few, deep in thought, full of concern, racked with worry. The sun had all but set and darkness enveloped the day, and the future for our loved ones was unclear. I was sitting where many had sat and many more will sit again. I was in a hospital waiting room, wondering, worried, fluctuating between hope and despair, uncertain of what that night would bring, with powerful feelings coursing through me, knowing that the course of events were out of my control, and all I could do was sit and wait. Of course, I know that some things are beyond our control, and that even with modern medicine and medical personnel ready to do anything in an instant, there are still some things that modern technology cannot always change. It cannot change often the trajectory of life and of death. To be clear, I was in a hospital waiting room because my brother Eric was critically ill. He had suffered a major stroke, and he needed emergency open heart surgery. His condition and when he went through doesn't really matter for this conversation. Suffice to say, you should know he survived, but not without serious consequence. I share this with you not because I'm going to speak about him or his illness, but rather being there invoked for me strong feelings and many thoughts. It aroused in me the many times I have been with others as their rabbi, as we've waited together about news about the outcome. And I've been with you, some of you in this room, in this sanctuary. Sometimes the news has been joyful, and other times not. Being so close to critical illness for so long with such a personal connection challenged me. And then I've had a bit of time and distance, and I've been able to think through how we cope with serious illness, how we cope with tragedy and unexpected events. And as I reflected, I came to appreciate that coping with such things is not just about illness and tragedy. It is, in fact, about how we cope with life itself, how we prepare to ourselves to meet the days that lie ahead. It is common at moments of crisis to wonder why. How could life turn so quickly? That which seems to be going in one direction so well, without warning, goes into another direction, disrupted, sending us flying off, careening about. This is a conversation I've had with many people many times. How can it happen? And in such a moment, we often look for meaning or reasons why. We try to make sense out of nonsense. With hope, perhaps, if we could figure out the why, maybe we could figure out how to fix what's happening, change the course of events. Sometimes in our search for understandings, we explain that which challenges us to our very core. We are willing to lower our sense of questioning, our skepticism, our ability to analyze and consider. And thus, in a state of vulnerability, we may turn to ancient texts or unsupported theories or charismatic figures who will offer easy answers and claim to make sense out of nonsense. Yet there are no easy answers. And regrettably, those who offer quick and easy answers are selling us fantasy rather than helping us face reality. For truth be told, the answers are quite frustrating. Life isn't fair. Illness, disaster, bad things occur to those who have been good and upstanding, and to those who have been bad and malicious as well. Sometimes bad people seem to get rewarded, and good people seem to get punished. Dr. Jennifer Kuntz, in an essay she wrote, observed, "Life is as fair as the weather." People who work hard, she wrote, tend to be more successful in life than those who do not, but even hardworking people lose their jobs or their marriages or their dreams. People who eat well and exercise regularly, statistically speaking, have better health and longevity. But illness sometimes has no rhyme or reason. Even the good die young. Just like life, weather has very little to do with justice or fairness. The weather just comes. Like it or not, we must deal with it, she wrote, as it comes. We certainly don't need to be reminded of that. Everyone in the sanctuary and those across the world joining us know that life is fickle, that it can change in an instant in the bat of an eye, and when it happens, we often feel surprised and shocked. And while we ask, why me, we could assuredly ask, why not me? Am I so special? So different that the random events that life throws about shouldn't touch me, shouldn't disrupt my life? We all know that there are no guarantees. That when a person is born, we're not promised a life that life will be smooth and without bumps or curves in the road. And at any moment, the path we're on could and can disappear. As I've talked with others about my brother's illness, others have shared with me that moment when the crisis hit their family or their lives and how life changed for them. So many of us have experienced an illness, a death, a sudden death, the loss of a job, a tragedy. In moments of crisis and of fear and of doubt, at a time when the future is unclouded and uncertain, we often look for answers. Though there are no answers. And all we can do in such moments, such situations, is push ahead. Such moments remind us that natural events don't have a reason. It is not a life lesson. It's not a punishment. It's not a reward. Things don't happen for a reason in nature. And if there is a reason, if we find it, it's because we, people, with our reason and our insight and our hope, ascribe meaning to what has occurred. We decide what to take from it, what we've learned, and how we will grow from it. We need to remember life is about as fair as the weather, and rather than thinking we can discern some secret meaning or hidden message, or figure out a way to escape that which is transpiring around us, we are called upon to face life with dignity. We can't change the events. but we have a choice of how to respond to them. Dealing with illness, crisis, natural events means accepting that the past is unchangeable. We can't undo things that are done. It's easy. It is easy to invest great deals of time and energy in reviewing the past, analyzing our behaviors, wondering, could it have been different? But such time is not well spent. It diverts our energies from what can be and what we can do. It shifts our focus from the present and the future, over which we do have some control, to the past, which is fixed and frozen. Our first response to challenge is deciding how we will respond. But we can't keep an event from occurring. We can determine our response to it. Viktor Frankl, noted psychiatrist and author, observed, between stimulus and response, there's a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. And I would add, in that moment of choice, in the decision, is our humanity, our ability to decide for ourselves how we will respond to the challenges that life presents. We can face such moments with dignity and courage and with the strength of the human spirit. We all cope with these things in different ways. Each of us draws upon that which gives us strength and courage. I'm going to suggest some of the ways that we cope during my brother's serious illness and continue to cope with it. It's not meant to be a comprehensive list. Different people will pick different aspects, and there are probably other ideas that you may have yourself, but these are the ways we coped. Some of the things that I read about along the way and suggestions some professionals made during the course of the summer and the following. In fact, this is not in any particular order. Many of the notes that I'm going to read right now, I actually wrote after a long night or day in the hospital. I wrote down what we were thinking or what had occurred, just as I experienced them, not a pattern. We faced the challenges of the summer with laughter and humor. Humor is not a form of denial. We didn't have any illusions about what was happening or what could happen in any moment. It was a way to confront the complexities and the realities with a sense of resolve. I believe we need to find hope and joy in the midst of the challenges. It doesn't happen all at once. It may take a long time along our journey, but we need to look for hope, that the possibility that life can improve. Humor and laughter are often too underrated. There are those who seek to diminish its power, to suggest that one can find humor and joy is not addressing the serious issues before them. I could not disagree more. For I know there were moments when our tears of fear and sorrow mingled with our tears of laughter. And in that moment, our hopes were renewed. And we came to know for at least a brief moment that while there is tragedy and sorrow, there is still joy and the love. I came to appreciate even more the importance of community. For someone to know he or she is not alone in the world, that there are others around to lean upon, to rest a weary head upon, to share fears and to share doubts. And it doesn't matter if people are physically close or connected over distance. It's the connection that's essential. Sometimes our community is family and sometimes not. Sometimes community is formed by our friends, people we pick and who pick us. It doesn't matter the source of community. What matters is that a person knows that he or she is connected to others, that they are part of something larger than themselves, that we have touched and have been touched by others. In life, in crisis, we need flexibility, for even the best laid plans, well, you know the rest. We need to be able to go with the flow, to roll with the punches. Oh, I know it sounds cliche, but just like that inflexible tree that breaks in the wind, so too the inflexible person is incapable of coping with complexity and the changing nature of life. There are those who think that being flexible is a weakness. It's not. It is a strength. It reveals confidence and agility, the ability to think on one's feet and renegotiate life on the move. We need to be able to go and roll with the changes and still be able to find joy and pleasure in the life we now live. An attitude. Attitude is important as well. And sometimes an insight into life and living comes from the most unexpected source. But it doesn't make the insight any less meaningful or the lesson any less worth learning. So one night during this summer, I was on call. My brother was no longer in a healthcare facility for a couple nights, and I was in the room sharing the bed with him. He couldn't roll over without assistance, even sit up. And he was asleep. It was late. I was watching bad television. One more Rocky movie. You don't know Rocky, the million and one shot, the guy who gets a chance, and every movie was always the same. He was down on his luck and back up, and down on his luck and back up. Rocky. And this was the final one, the last one. Rocky, now middle-aged, reviewing his life. Okay, that's another sermon. Okay. And he's trying to explain to his son what makes a champion. And he said to his son, "It's not how hard you hit, but how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward." How hard you can get hit and get back up and keep moving forward. Here I was, lying next to a guy who had been hit very hard, and he kept on going. What gave him strength in part was he talked to others in the rehab who had been as hit as hard or harder, who literally had been felled by a stroke or an amputation, and they needed to walk forward, literally had to walk step by step. Young and old who decided no matter how hard they were hit, they were going to get up and move forward. No guarantee, just a desire to move forward. Life can hit hard. It can knock a person off its feet. It can turn life inside up and upside down. And it doesn't care about the pain it leaves in its wake. Those who take that hit and keep moving forward, those people demonstrate a resiliency and an inner strength that speaks to the durability of the human spirit. Someone once observed, this quote has been credited to different people, that a person's like a teabag. Much is inside, but the fullness and the richness of a person, their essence, is not revealed without being steeped in hot water. In the experience in life that the fullness of a person is revealed. In the stress and heat of difficulty, people are called to act upon that which is best within them, that reveals their essence, what they are truly made of. It is in the cauldron of life that one's core is revealed and our different qualities and essence are released. And while life throws obstacles and challenges in our path, we must not forget there is much beauty and love around us as well. Unfortunately, sometimes we fail to see the wonder and glory in a given moment because we're angry or pain blinds us. Being open to seeing the wonderfulness of life does not mean the pain will magically disappear or the sorrow will simply fade away. But it does allow the joy to seep through and the love to inform the moment as well. Life. It's about as fair as the weather. So we can spend our time cursing the rain, or we'd expect it. Bring along an umbrella and to walk through it, prepared with others at our side. We can open ourselves to the possibilities that life affords. If life's ability to turn on a dime teaches us anything, it is that we must savor the moments and the opportunities that we have. It calls us and says, enjoy. Enjoy the beauty. A new year stretches out before us. And while there is no doubt there we will face challenges, we will also have glorious moments as well. If we open ourselves to the possibility, some go through our day so concerned about the ill that will befall us or a loved one that we miss the beauty that is right next to us. We need to open ourselves to the possibility of beauty. In order to do so, it means we need to live with a sense of awareness and appreciation. Jon Kabat-Zinn, professor of medicine and author, observed, now I paraphrase, that at one Las Vegas casino, there was a warning. It said, you must be present to win. You must be present. You must be aware. You must be attentive, open to life's extraordinary possibilities. Then you can experience love or experience peace or joy or contentment. When you are here, you can have the experience of your life. We turn down the noise a bit. Take time to appreciate. Our lives become richer, more textured. In such moments, we experience a sense of appreciation and gratitude. Oh, I know it's easy to hear a rabbi say these words. This is Yom Kippur, of course. What is a rabbi supposed to say? Life is challenges. Life is opportunity. Take time. Savor the moment. It's so easy to hear these words and to ignore them. Sure, we know we should pay attention. But we always imagine there will be more time. Time when I get around to everything else that I want to do. Time when things settle down. Then I'll focus on what truly matters. But life doesn't work that way. It doesn't wait for us or until we get our work done. I was just reminded of this a few days ago. Monday, in between Rosh Hashanah and tonight, this past Monday. I had received some really good news I was waiting for. I was very excited. It came early in the morning. Phone rang. I was excited. Called a few people and left a few voicemails to let them know. And all of a sudden, my oldest brother, the brother who I had been sitting in that waiting room with, worried about our middle brother, the brother who I had shared also a bed with, sat in chairs with, spent nights with, worried and wondering, was calling back. And I was assuming he was going to say, great news, I'm so excited for you. But I could tell by the tone of his voice that he hadn't even heard my voicemail yet. There was something in his voice that sounded worried and concerned and wrong. He told me on Monday morning, my mother had suffered a stroke. It was a devastating stroke. And in that moment, life turned again. And I was reminded how unpredictable life can be. So I went up to Detroit and saw my mother in the hospital. I sat there. And I went back to the hotel room late that night, and I started writing this paragraph. And I turned off the light and closed my eyes and fell asleep for a few hours, perhaps. And the phone rang. Thursday morning early, my mother had died. So you may be wondering, what am I doing here? Why am I standing here tonight? Obviously, I thought about it quite a bit. It was a complex decision, but this is where I wanted to be. I had been with my family for several days in Detroit, not all of my family, just part of my family, and we'll be together soon. I'll be leaving here again. But tonight, I wanted to be here. And my family supported that decision. And it goes without saying, if I had made a different decision, I know all of you would have respected that as well. If I hadn't been here and Rabbi Baum had led services on her own, that would have been fine. But I wanted to be here. I wanted to be here because this is one of my communities from which I draw much strength and comfort. In this place, within this community, I have shared much. The birth of my children. Some of you remember 23 years ago, Rosh Hashanah, Terry went into labor and we left. And you were all prepared to lead services on your own. You said, that's where a rabbi should be. And when my father died, this community rose up, reached out to me and my family again. As I look about, I know we have shared so many significant occasions together. Being here, connect with you, gives me strength and courage. It reminds me that I do not face the fragility of life alone. I wanted to be here because, like so many modern families, my family is spread literally across the world. So tonight, as I'm giving this talk to you, my brother who suffered the stroke is in California. My son is living and studying overseas, and I have relatives scattered across the United States. And they knew I was going to talk tonight. So we're joined together through technology and through love. Being here, I am still connected with my family, for they are with me this night. I wanted to be here because this is Yom Kippur, and tomorrow afternoon, many of us will join together for our Yisker service, our service to remember those of our loved ones who have died. We'll have a funeral, but being together tomorrow with all of you who choose to be here as we light those Yahrzeit candles, as we listen to the names of our loved ones, I am strengthened. I know I am not alone. I wanted to be here tonight to give this talk. Because while the events I've spoken about are specific to my family, this isn't about my family. We all have, or we all will, experience loss, death, illness, unexpected events. And while over the years I've spoken about coping with the complexity of life and enjoying it, I know it's easy to hear such words and quickly move on to the next thing. I genuinely hope that you listening to my words tonight will take these words to heart. Life is about as fair as the weather. Life can change in an instant. Our lives and the lives of those we love came with no guarantee. So make the time to do it now. Do what is essential. Do not wait. Do not imagine that another day is guaranteed. In Judaism, when we lift a cup of wine or a glass of scotch, we say, L'chaim. L'chaim. To life. We don't say life is good. We don't say life is fair. We just say to life. For where there is life, there is possibility. The author, Rachel Naomi Remen, captured it this way in one of her stories. When a grandfather was explaining to his grandchild, that we say L'chaim because, quote, no matter what difficulty life brings, no matter how hard or painful or unfaithful life is holy. Life is holy and it is worth celebrating. L'chaim is a way of life. It seems less about celebrating life and more about the wisdom of choosing life. And I would add, when we choose life, we stand in a long line of people we know and most we don't, who have faced challenges and hardship beyond measure, people who recognize that with life, there is possibility. With life, people have resiliency and inner strength to face that which we never imagined we could face, And while we may not win every battle, and there are some battles we wish we were never forced to even engage in, we are called upon this because we are human. We are called upon to rise up, to stand strong, to look life in the eye and death and illness as well. And we declare, L'chaim. We choose life, even when it's hard, even when it isn't challenging. So we move forward this day, this Yom Kippur, not knowing what tomorrow may bring, but with commitment that we will meet the dawning of a new day. No guarantee, no script, no map. We choose to move forward, for this is our heritage, and this will be our legacy.